This is Haunted America with your host, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896. And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
And hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of Haunted America Radio. My name's Al Shepard, and I'm going to be joined by my lovely and talented co-host, Josh Mantello, just as soon as he logs in here, having a little audio problems. And here on Haunted America Radio, we discuss ghosts, what they are, how to hunt them. Josh is an experienced ghost hunter, and I'm just beginning down that path, so I get to ask all the dumb questions. Special guest for this week is going to be Ron Kolek, founder of the New England Ghost Project, so you're going to want to stay tuned for that. All right, we're just here waiting for Josh to call in. I see him in the chat room, but I don't see him on my caller list yet. So we're just waiting for him to try his click-to-talk button. And if that doesn't work, he's going to call in on his cell phone. So this is our second show. Last week we had all kinds of technical problems getting things going and started here, but we are working them out quickly as we go. And there, I believe that is you, is it not?
Yes, this is me, and I should be streaming live over the internet now.
Yeah, I believe you are, and I believe you can hear me, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so I got that technical problem worked out. No thanks to the people that were helping me. All right, so might as well start off here. What have you been doing the last week? What you been up to?
Oh, it's been a pretty busy week trying to still wrap up this investigation we did last week. And actually, I've been contacted by now an outside company wanting me to host a paranormal event for them. Training some of our new members of Berkshire Paranormal and trying to get them together and all that. So it's been a pretty productive week.
Good. Yeah, we had the week off from our other radio show and got preempted by baseball. So I actually had the first Saturday off that I've had since last fall. So we went down to Old Sturbridge Village and walked around and looked at all the 1830s, 40s type buildings there. I walked into a lot of them, and it's funny, I was wondering, this would be a great place for a haunting, you know. It just looks it, with this house with all their original belongings in there and things like that. So it often made me wonder if there's been any reports down there or not.
There's none that I can think of off the top of my head, but generally when you have a place that's of historic significance and there's almost always a haunting involved with it somehow in one way or the other. So
I would think that just comes along with the, you know, when you got houses that are 150, 200 years old, they've seen so much life in them that it's, something's bound to remain, I would think. You'd know more about that than I would. That's just my opinion.
Yep, well, and that's what we're going to try and talk about today as we get going through the show here.
All right. Well, any idea what you want to start with?
Well, I guess our first, you know, kind of want to bring up is, you know, and kind of ask you, Al, you know, what's your opinion? What, you know, kind of the outsider's view and what a ghost or what a spirit is, you know, kind of what your opinion is, you know. I have formed my opinions already, but a lot of them have been forged based on, you know, my experiences when dealing with ghosts.
Yeah, I mean, my thought originally was the consciousness of a deceased person that hadn't passed over yet to, you know, heaven or whatever you want to call it. But as I've been reading in the last couple weeks, as you know, I read Voices of Eternity, and that book was all about someone communicating through EVPs to people that have already crossed over and are already in heaven, supposedly, and they're talking back from there. So it kind of broadly expanded my idea of what a ghost is, and maybe ghosts aren't just people that are stuck here and haven't crossed over like you see on the Ghost Whisperer or something like that, but yet it's more of a two-way street where they can almost come and go back and forth between here and heaven as they need to, you know?
Yeah, that's you know, a good way to kind of describe it. And I think, you know, your opinion and the way you're thinking of it now is really kind of the general public's opinion. And the prior, I guess I'll use the word uninitiated for a best term of, I guess, the initiating being the people who've actually hunted ghosts or have had paranormal experiences or have done a little bit more research than others on it. But a lot of it, I think, too, kind of plays into people's religious beliefs. I don't know what your opinion on that is. I know, you know, doing a little bit of research for the show today as we came into it, you know, just looking to see what religions around the world have in their faith system, a belief in ghosts or the afterlife or something like that. And I think you'd be surprised, you know, most every religion, I guess with the exception of atheism, which really is no religion, I suppose, all has a belief in some sort of life after death, which I guess in the true sense and the basicness of what we're doing is trying to find some sort of proof of life after death or where we go after death.
Yeah, I was sitting there thinking about this, laying in bed the other night, actually, and it seems the older I get, and the closer I get to that day coming, my interest seems to be gaining, where I want to know more about what's on the other side. I mean, my father died when I was young, and he died at 49. Here I am, I'm coming up on 47. So it's always been the back of my mind, you know, gee, is 49 the end for me too, you know? So I'm finding myself being more interested in finding out what's on the other side. So as I look around, I'm like, okay, I watched the movie 14 Degrees, and they mentioned a poll or something in there where, maybe you remember the exact numbers, but I don't. It's like 80% of the people or something believe in God, but only 20% believe in ghosts or something like that, which made absolutely no sense. You know, they believe in an afterlife, but they don't believe in ghosts. And so, you know, there's a lot of, the more I read, the more contradicting it gets, where one person says this, one says that, and it can get really confusing the more you dig into it.
Right. Well, I think when you look at that number, you got to look, I suppose that, you know, that I'm sure that maybe was a poll done by Americans. Most Americans are some sort of, form of Christianity. I just did some quick research, a few things off of a couple web pages. It wasn't a real in-depth research into it, just ghosts and religion. And this wasn't really a big surprise to me, but Catholics are a little bit different here. Christianity and all its different off-branches basically believe, you know, there is an afterlife, obviously. You know, you either go to heaven or you go to hell upon your death based upon your doings and your life while you were alive. You know, so every religion has some sort of belief in like that. When you do pass, something happens to your spirit or your soul in one form or another. Christianity and it's more serious side, believe you only have those two options. You go to A or you go to B, and that's it. You can't come back. You can't hang out in between. You can't communicate back. Your soul is where it is for eternity at that point. Catholicism, which is, a Christianity in itself, but, a more serious sect, I suppose, does believe in a purgatory, where I suppose you weren't the perfect person to get you into heaven, but you weren't evil in life either to put you in hell. And I guess it's described in the way that I read it this afternoon about an hour ago. It's kind of a place for you to kind of try and make right for what you did to maybe earn your existence into heaven, for the better afterlife. And every other religion has its own. Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, all with the exception of Islam, all have some sort of belief in an in-between or a spirit or your soul getting caught somewhere in between trying to make things right in one way or the other.
Now, different things I've read over the last few weeks, one said that there is no hell, that was just created by church hierarchy way back when to pretty much scare people into line to follow church doctrine. And reading Voices of Eternity and the supposed EVPs that she was getting, Sarah was getting from, I guess you'd call it heaven, and this was also backed up by George Meeks in his book with his Spiricom experiments, that they say there's actually seven different levels to heaven, and usually you'll die and you'll pass on to one of these levels of heaven. You'll spend time there, and then you will be reincarnated back to the earth and go through another lifetime, and then you'll learn something more and grow as an individual, as a person during that lifetime. And when you get to heaven next time, you'll be in the next higher level. And then you just keep doing that. You keep reincarnating until you get to that point where you are what's considered to be a perfect soul with no, I guess you'd say, sins or anything like that, and at which point you would reach the seventh level of heaven. So there's so many different things. And it's got me thinking, You hear a lot about demons and things like that, and you hear the argument that, okay, that hell doesn't really exist, but then you'll turn on a show and you'll see a psychic on there saying it's a negative entity or a demon, and it makes me wonder, is it actually a demon from hell or just a real nasty human being? The more I dive into this, the more questions I have.
Right. Yeah. I really agree with that completely. There's so many. I guess the problem is with what we do is we don't know. We will never know what we're actually dealing with here on any level, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. And that's like with Sarah's supposed talking to people that have already crossed over. People that are supposedly in heaven already and then communicating back, giving her firsthand knowledge of what it looks like over there. And that's why I think that part of EVPs and things intrigue me the most, because that's where the true answers lie. The ghost in a haunted house, you can learn a lot about how to communicate with them and things like that, and possibly cross them over, but being able to communicate with the ones that are supposedly already there, already crossed over, that can actually give you concrete answers about what it looks like there, that's the part that really intrigues me.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I kind of go back to what you were touching on earlier, and it's really a whole episode in itself. You could really go into religion and the afterlife. I mean, it's and religious doctrine. That's a show all of in itself that we could probably go back to and talk about for hours on end. But you know, I wanted to touch on. You mentioned how hell was just something made up to be, to scare the followers into doing what they were told. And that's, the basic laws of, mankind, the Ten Commandments. You do this or you will go to hell. I mean, those are the laws you follow now. Don't steal, be good to others. I mean, these are the simple things that we ask people to follow now. But back then, I guess you want to see people were a little bit simpler. And, they had to, and church back then also ran the state, your pope or your head of church was the head of the government in many circumstances. So he was laying down the law, and at the same time, and make people follow, because more people were obviously a lot more religious than needed, to set it out in that way.
Yeah, exactly. You hear nowadays the big deal about separation of church and state, and that's always been something to me that can never be separated, because every law that we have in the country was based on a foundation of religion. I mean, it's like you said, the Ten Commandments basically mirror the basic laws of every day, so I don't see how you can separate one from the other. I'm still undecided whether I believe, yes, that was something that was made up and created as a terror tactic or whatever you want to call it, or not. I mean, I believe in God, but I don't go to church, because I always looked at organized religion as more of a social event than anything else. I've always believed I can sit here in my chair in my living room and talk to God just as well as going into a church and doing it,
Yeah. I think I mean, and that's kind of where I wanted to start tonight, too, it was 5 o'clock, it's kind of in between night and afternoon. But kind of wanted to start the show is, when a lot of people start questioning whether or not they are haunted, or their house is haunted, or they have some sort of spirit activity, a lot of times you really need to go back and ask them, what their religious belief is. And sometimes based on their religious belief is what type of haunting they think they might have or how they should deal with it. I know people listening right now is probably saying, tuned in to hear a show about ghosts and they're bantering on about real religion. So if you came in late, that's kind of why we were talking about that. Is I personally feel a person's religious beliefs really carry a lot into how you handle a haunting, what the type of hauntings are, and stuff like that. But I think as we move on now, that's the religious space. But now I think we really need to start thinking, now with modern day paranormal investigation, and where religion and science, you're almost going to touch on angels and demons type of stuff here, science or religion kind of clash, and they do in this circumstance a lot, and because there's so many different types when we talk about paranormal investigations and hauntings, there's so many different types of hauntings, different types of spirits. Mainly there's only 4, but some people might think there's more, and whether or not your religious system, there might only be 3 or 2 different types of hauntings, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, it brings up an episode of Psychic Kids that I watched in the last week, where the teenage daughter was seeing spirits of her uncle and other people around her, but her mother's religious beliefs were there's only good and bad, and the only spirits that you can see would have to be divine spirits, that normal people's spirits don't come back. They're not allowed that privilege. So it was really hard for them to convince the mother that the daughter was seeing the uncle, because her religion told her that that was impossible.
Right.
And
well, I think, too, if you go... Oh, go ahead.
Nope, go ahead. I was just going to say, right. Go ahead. I'll wait till you're done.
I think if anybody's ever seen the movie, it was out a few years ago, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. That kind of plays into a possession, which, and possession and demons and demonic possession does fall into the realm of paranormal and paranormal investigations. They're kind of really an extreme bunch in their own, the people who can really go out and actually investigate and try and deal with what they would call demonic possession. But, that movie is another one where it really kind of showed where, they tried to help this person. They had to use a church to try and help with the possessed. A lot of the type of stuff that happened around the house would be something considered paranormal and in relevance to a haunting.
Yeah, now, a few minutes ago you mentioned four different types of hauntings. I wasn't aware there were four, so what are the four categories?
All right, yeah. Well, basically when we start talking about ghosts and spirits and going in and do a paranormal investigation, we're looking at four different types of things that we might be dealing with. Some of them can sometimes, and a lot of this will vary sometimes on the group and, like I said, religious beliefs. Your first is obviously, we'll just call it a spirit haunting, or better known, you could also call it a conscious ghost, or a ghost with a conscience that can actually communicate back and forth with me and you. These are the type of spirits that will give you an EVP. These are the type of spirits that will reach out, touch you, or try and make themselves known in some form or another and interact back and forth with your investigator or your person who's having the problems. The person who's actually, having the paranormal activity in her house is a spirit is interacting. These are things when we'll go into a house and say, "Are you here with us?" And we want it to come back and say yes. This is a conscious ghost. This is a spirit. This actually is the leftover energy of a person who has passed on and for whatever reason is now stuck behind.
Otherwise known as an intelligent haunting, I've heard.
While I was going on that whole talk, I was trying to think of the word and I couldn't think of it. Intelligent haunting. The second, and these two are your most common, would be a residual haunting. The best way to really kind of describe this is just aware and a record. If you ever gone to if your house has a spot where you always step the same day, or you always walk along this one spot of your floor every day for hours on end, and that rug, that piece of floor is going to get worn in. You can tell where you always stepped. So, just like say when you're walking around in person, you're always leaving behind little pieces of skin you're leaving behind, parts of you. And you take a step, you're losing hair and pieces of skin, stuff like that. The theory is also that you may be also leaving behind some sort of energy. Your, spirit energy stays behind you. So if you do something repeatedly over and over again in your life, when you die, that energy may still be there continuing through that cause. So, now, this has no consciousness and no intelligence to it, and it cannot interact. So, for instance, I'll refer into the Houghton Mansion. We have reports of footsteps going up and down the servant stairs. Now, if you imagine when that mansion was in use and occupied, the servants would have gone up and down those stairs hundreds of times a day, thousands of times a week, over and over again. So maybe their energy is still continuing up and down those stairs. Now, as a living person, you can probably... you might see it, you might hear the footsteps, but you can stand in the way that ghost isn't going to move. The ghost isn't going to try and hide from you, or it's not going to try and scare you. It doesn't know you're there. There's no consciousness to it. It's just leftover residual energy, hence the residual haunting, continuing out its path that it's always done. If you tear down those stairs, tear down the building, and imagine just that time, that space, that once the stairs once occupied, the energy will still go up and down it. And there's different reasons why they say, during electrical storms, they might be more stronger and something along those lines.
So basically, I spend 8 hours a day in this chair at my desk. There's a good chance somebody's going to see me here after I've left.
Right. Now, that may not be your ghost. That won't be your spirit. But It's just the psychic or the energy impression you have left on that space and time, you know, for eternity. You know, you've left an energy signature in that area of your chair.
Well, maybe it'll clean my desk for me after I'm gone, because I don't seem to get around to doing it. Okay, what's the third one?
Well, the third, and this here can almost, I don't know where it would come from. It'd be poltergeist. Everybody hears the word poltergeist and gets scared. The poltergeist is a German word for noisy ghost. Now, whether or not this is a human spirit that has failed to move on into whatever you move on to in the afterlife, or whether this is a inhuman spirit, which I'll kind of touch on a little bit more in a minute, it is kind of unsure, at least to me, and I think everybody really has a different opinion on this. These are ghosts. They appear mean. It's a no, but in the basic terms, it's a noisy ghost. So it is scary. It's rattles your walls, throws things at you, stuff along those lines. Generally, poltergeists are found more often around adolescent males, is kind of the belief right now. They're in a broader sense, adolescent teenagers, but in general, a lot more often adolescent males. I think due to their mindset at that point, you know, they're kind of, you know, they're going through changes, and they're more able to get influenced by different things, and sometimes it'll result in some scratching on the, you know, physical scratching on the body, but they move on. It's not so much a possession, which again I'll get onto with our next little category. They move on, and sometimes will jump across the city to the next person. It's not kind of a permanent possession where I'll jump kind of into our next thing, is where you start dealing with demonic hauntings. Now, this year is where I was saying earlier, might weigh a little bit more in on your religious beliefs. Now, if you believe in no afterlife, then obviously none of this is going to measure in. If you're a Catholic, you believe in angels and demons. Just like angels can come to you, so can demons. Demons can possess you. We've all seen the movie The Exorcism. That was a demonic haunting or a demonic possession. If you're Catholic, you go to your church for an exorcism to get rid of it. Paranormal investigators probably aren't going to help you too much, except for go in and tell you there's nothing we can do for you. You should call your priest and go from there. So demonic haunting is basically an inhuman spirit. And, you know, it's going to weigh on your religious beliefs. I suppose if, you know, you're an atheist, this might change your mind in religion, but, you know, you're gonna approach it differently. You know, generally, an exorcism, and all forms of religion have some sort of exorcism ritual to get rid of the inhuman, demonic, or evil spirits.
All right. Yeah, I'd heard the first three categories, but I hadn't heard demonic hauntings as being in a category itself. I heard poltergeist as being some of people saying that those are psychokinetic energy coming from the teenager itself and not actually a spirit or a ghost.
I have read that theory, and it actually makes very good sense. I forgot where I read it, but yes, due to their current mindset, you know, due to their adolescence, and you know, they have a natural psychic ability, and it's almost a form of epilepsy. It's where with epilepsy your body is going into the seizures and causing physical damage. It's almost like a psychic epilepsy where you're losing control. They don't have control of their mind's sixth sense, so you have to kind of adopt into the theory that there is a psychic ability, but you reach that age, your psychic ability kind of goes out of control on you, and you're psychokinetically moving things off the walls, scratching yourself, scratching other people without even realizing it.
It's almost like an epileptic seizure, but you're projecting it outward onto other people and other objects instead of inside yourself.
I did read that, and I don't remember where I actually where I read that theory. It was was within the last month. I was doing some just random research online and came across it. I can't remember where though.
I've seen it in two or three different places. I can't remember where, but it was a couple three different places where they were both agreeing with that same thing, which I don't know. I suppose, you know, if I can sit here and believe in ghosts, I guess I could believe in the ability to move things with your mind, too. But it seems like some of the poltergeist activity I've heard about, an awful lot of stuff happens. And it just seems like an awful lot of, I don't know. What little bit I've heard is that it takes quite a bit of energy for a spirit to move stuff. And to be flinging stuff around as much as happens in poltergeist activities, you would think the person doing it would be totally drained, is my opinion, you know?
Yeah, that's I haven't really witnessed any myself, so I can't really, you know, speak in on it, I suppose. You know, all I really know of poltergeist activity is really just what I've read.
Well, coming up soon, Ron Kolek from the New England Ghost Project. Maybe we can ask him and see if he's ever run into that firsthand. I want to remind people in the chat room listening, if they want to call in, you can either use the click-to-talk button up at the top there or dial 646-716-5896 if you got any questions on what we've been talking about or any experiences you want to share with us. So out of these four types of hauntings, Josh, how many of them have you run into personally?
Well, I think, and this is what you're going to get from most people, I have not ran into a demonic, nor do I really wish to at this point. I think if somebody were to approach me with their house and they say they had demons, I would probably be calling somebody else to help. I might want to go and maybe just be an onlooker, because that is a study all in itself. Just like there are many there's different hierarchies of angels. There's different hierarchies of demons. I mean, you have to study demonology to really know this. There's a whole technique in and of itself. So I really wouldn't want that, nor have I seen that. Poltergeist, I think I just said, I really haven't come across anything like that. One of my last investigations, I was starting to think it could have leaned towards there. We were dealing with some scratching and some different noises, and there was an adolescent male in the house. So I jumped on the investigation quickly just to rule it out and make sure that wasn't the case, and it wasn't. But in general, your run-of-the-mill stuff is your intelligent haunts and your residual. If you talk about places, and this is kind of where I wanted to go with our conversation anyways, and it's more apt with these two subjects, is where they come from and why they're there. You know, I think everybody has a different thought of what causes the different hauntings. I really kind of pretty much covered the residual stuff already. You know, just you did something so much in your life that your energy continues to do it. But with the spirit haunt or intelligent haunting, there's a lot of different theories as to what this may be. If you're going to take the religious belief, it might be that, you know, there's something you did in your life, you know, that you need to make right. You know, so in other words, there's something you did wrong, and in order for you to pass on to your heaven, you need to, you know, make right. And so your goal as a spirit is to do this and to make what was wrong right. The other major belief, and this is what lends to a lot of hauntings, especially in battlefields, is great tragedy. You know, you die suddenly, you know, without purpose, you know, or what you feel might be without purpose, and you may not even know you have passed on because it was such a sudden death that your spirit, your conscience, doesn't know to go to the light. It doesn't know to go, you know, go to heaven or to hell. So I think that's what's causing, you know, a lot of these intelligent hauntings. Also, I suppose if you're a type of person now that doesn't really have a religion, you don't have something that's going to guide you. You know, you don't have a belief system that's going to guide you to go to either place you're supposed to go, then you may just hang around in purgatory because that's what you do.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, and it totally went out of my head. I was chatting or typing in the chat room. I guess I'm not a big multitasker as I thought I was. The intelligent, yeah, like you said, I guess there's so many different reasons why. If you've got something that you haven't finished and that you feel needs to be finished, maybe you'd stick around for that. Or if you feel you need to warn someone of something, and that's what makes me wonder, going back to what I was saying earlier, if it's a two-way street, if once you go into the light, you cross over to heaven, do you have the ability to come back again and warn somebody about something or things like that? And I've heard stories where the haunting doesn't start until a certain thing happens. You know, okay, all of a sudden, the deceased children suddenly become pregnant or something, and the spirit comes back to see the grandchild. And it's like, okay, well, where have they been all this time in between? You know, questions like that I wonder about.
Yeah, I think you're kind of right there. And this is something I suppose I bring up three times a show, is we don't know. And as much as some investigators and some paranormal experts may try and tell you that they know, you don't. We don't know. We have no idea what happens when you die. The only time that you will know is when you're dead. And if you're trying to communicate back, half the people you're trying to communicate back to aren't going to believe you. And the other half that do believe you, they're going to try and tell somebody, and chances are the person they tell aren't going to believe you. So we don't know. We won't know until we pass on, or until that magical little box that's invented that is definitive proof of what happens and we can communicate.
And it seems to me that you're more likely to going to be able to, you're going to be able to come up with that magic box or that magic tool by having the more people involved, the better. And
right.
That's the great thing about this new science, is anybody can do it, because like we were saying on last week's show, nobody knows for sure yet. Nobody knows what the right and the wrong way to do things are. So therefore, it's a wide open playing field to anyone. I mean, anyone that's listening to us right now or in the chat room or whatever has just as much, could be just as able to find something as anyone else, as someone who's been doing this for 20 years. Because over the last 20 years, they're still not really any closer than they were when they started. You know, they've
right.
got theories that, yeah, EMF meters help you detect things, and K2 meters help you, and infrared might help you, but they still don't know. So this is a science that anyone and everyone can get involved in. And like right now, I just bought a mini voice recorder to record EVPs, and my wife grabbed it, and she's up at the cemetery, sitting
right.
at her parents' grave, and just experimenting. You know, she might not get anything, but maybe she will. And, you know, I gave her some basic things, questions to ask, you know, to prove, you know, what's your name, what year is it, things like that, just to give some basis, and if she does get an answer, great, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's just as apt to get an answer as you or someone who's been doing it for 30 years, you know? So, and that's what I think is if we can stop people from being scared of ghosts or the thought of ghosts, because all ghosts are is this the spirit of living people without the body. They're still
right.
The same personality and the same person. So you can talk to ghosts just like you would carry on a conversation with any other stranger that you've just met, you know. Get out this voice recorder, set it down, ask them questions, be polite, and you never know what you might catch.
Oh, exactly, yeah. And that's the whole thing, is we don't know, but and there's so much going on right now and so many people getting into it that, you know, we don't know. You know, so the more that do it, the better our chances are at actually finding it and eventually knowing.
Now, is there a website somewhere? I know TAPS lists like their TAPS family of, you know, ghost groups that are part of their family. Is there any website anywhere that has like a directory of all the different groups that are around the country, if someone wanted to see if there was one in their area or not?
There's a few different directories. I'm trying to remember the websites off the top of my head. There is the TAPS family, and if you do go to their page, they list it by state, and they pretty much have the country covered with the TAPS family. I know there's now coming out, you know, another TV show crew, the Ghost Adventures crew. They have adopted a similar thing where certain groups are part of their crew, and I guess they're the groups they approve. And I suppose if you go to ghostvillage.com, which is a very big paranormal and ghost-related website, actually the largest on the internet, they have an entire list of groups by the state. And if you Google search it, there's a bunch of them. I know Michael Baker, the director and creator of 14 Degrees, he is trying, and he's launched what's going to eventually be the biggest database of groups and hauntings and results. And I don't know how far along he's gotten in that, but I know he's, you know, working on something like that. So there are databases out there for this type of stuff.
Okay, because I know, like, TAPS family members, they have a fairly rigid rules as to who can be in a group and who can't and all that. My thought was someone like me just coming off the street, if they wanted to get involved and learn how to do this better, you know, if there's groups out there that willing to take people under their wing like that and teach them. And of course they could always start their own group, but of course you need to know a little bit about what you're doing before you do that. So but that was just my thought, is one that didn't have all the politics and the rules and regulations involved, that a husband or wife or somebody could you know, hook up with and start down the path. Because it seems to me the more people you get involved, the more investigators you have, the quicker you're going to find an answer.
Right, and I believe that too. And a little bit, I'm going to try and get to it quick before we get to Ron, but I wanted to mention, you're absolutely right. You know, if you want to get into this, you can go out and start your own group. It's a tough thing to start doing. You got to purchase the equipment. You need to get a name for yourself out there. If you go to my MySpace, I wrote a thing on it, and I have a blog on there, and I think it might be on BerkshireParanormal.com. Quality investigation, not quantity of investigations. And I think that's what happens with a lot of groups when they get started. They says, all right, I'm a paranormal investigator, and I'm going to go and just go to every place I possibly can and look for a ghost. I didn't do that when I started, and I still don't do that. I still only do 3 or 4 investigations a year. Some of these people are out there claiming they're doing 3 or 4 a month, 3 or 4 a week. Are you really doing any service at that point, just rushing and trying to get as many as you can whenever you can just to say you did it? I think your best bet is to maybe start on with another group where you can go, you can learn, and they can teach you. You know, most groups have a web page now with emails, and just go to their address, you know, and email them, ask them. I get at least one a week. My group, I keep relatively small. We just brought in some new people, so I'm probably not going to bring in new people for another year. So, you know, you got to try and get your timing right. And this will kind of segue into, well, what I wanted to talk about, though, is you want to find a group that you're going to work good with, because there are different ways of investigating. And I'm sure as you look around the internet at the different groups, there's so many different types of investigating that, you know, you want to find one that jives you, that fits you just right.
Well, that actually leads me to a clip that I had here last week for last week's show that I didn't play. So let me just play this here. I believe it's you and the 14 Degrees movie talking about how you pair up investigators.
Different investigators work better with certain people. Everybody has their own technique. I personally sometimes like to taunt, try and get the spirits going. Some people aren't comfortable doing that, so obviously I'm not going to work with somebody like that. So you're gonna know who works best with each other and what their particular skill is. If I'm really good at EVP, I'm also not going to pair up with somebody else who's really good at EVP. I might be somebody who's more of a photographic expert. So, you know, you're mix and match who works well with what, whose techniques best pair with somebody else. Sometimes maybe I'll take somebody who's more scientific approach and put them with somebody who might douse and be a little bit more psychic-like. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, and you know, I still kind of adopt to that same philosophy. You know, there are a couple different ways of doing this. For those of you, and I like to refer to this just because it's what people know, you'll see ghost hunters on Sci-Fi and Taps. They take a very scientific and debunking type of attitude. They go in not with the sole purpose of trying to knock out the person's claims, but they have an effort to try and say, okay, that noise you heard was a pipe banging in your wall, it's not a ghost. And a very scientific form of doing that. And then you also have the type of groups that, you know, will adopt almost the religious belief into their investigations. And what they do is based on that. I know of a group that is comprised of a witch's coven, you know, and witchcraft and or Wiccan, paganism, is a religion in of itself, and they base their entire investigation based on their belief, using the different forms of communication techniques with spirits based in on that. They also have the different types of investigations also based upon the psychic, where the groups will utilize a psychic in their investigations and try and communicate with the spirit that way and almost pass off the proof of the haunting based on the psychic's readings and psychic's abilities. Now, that depends on whether or not you believe in psychic ability or not anyways. And then there's a group that kind of hybrid it. They use all the scientific equipment. They use EMF. They use EVP. They use the video recorders and thermal imaging, but they will also sometimes bring in a psychic or use dowsing pendulums or Ouija boards or whatever they feel they need to help communicate because the equipment isn't capturing it.
That's something that was always funny to me is you believe in ghosts enough where you're out there hunting them, but you might not believe in psychic abilities. You know, and it seems to me they're closely related. So I can see where one could help the other. I mean, a psychic to me would be a great tool on a ghost hunt. You know, if they can say, okay, there's one in the corner right now, which allows you to direct your energies and your meters and your cameras to a certain spot and look for cold spots and EMF fluctuations and things like that, then great. You know, if it narrows down your area that you need to cover, it seems to me that would be nothing but helpful, you know.
Right. And I guess that depends. My biggest pitfall with using a psychic, and I'm not completely objective to it. My group does not utilize one. There are some cases where I will work with a group that does, and Ron does, and I'm going to talk to him about it when he gets in on us. And you're trying to prove something with something that's unproven. Is kind of my theory in on trying to use psychics. If my goal is to try and get that one thing that's definitive, that one thing that can say, yes, this is absolutely paranormal, I can't get a logical reason to it, or this is a logical reason to it, and I can't explain why this would naturally happen. It's hard to do that saying I found it because of a psychic, when the psychic ability in itself isn't a mainstream science and a mainstream accepted thing quite yet.
I can't think of the guy's name. I know his first name's Rick. He's an investigator and he's a psychic. And like he says, the trouble with being a psychic is all my evidence is in my head. He says, I can tell you what I see, but I can't prove it to you. And the fact that you've got so many psychics out there that aren't, that are just pretending to be, for the money-making aspect, makes it hard, too. But I've seen a few, I mean, not personally, but I've heard of a few psychics that it's really hard to dispute the evidence that they've come forward with. So, it's one of them, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, I guess. I think if you found a good one that was able to prove to you that they were truly psychic, I would think you'd want to use them, if once you've got confidence in them.
Right, and the thing is my only problem is because, I like to try and pass things right off. I want to be the one to give it to scientists and say, here it is, try and get it, and they're not going to accept it using a psychic. But that's me, and I have nothing against the groups that use psychics. They work great. There's a few that I've met that I do feel have great abilities, and I would believe whatever they told me. I'm not saying I personally don't believe in psychic ability. I do. I have met some psychics that I feel have a very good talent for what they do, and I try and stay away from it. But like I said, I'm not accepted to it either.
Yeah, I wasn't saying just accept them on face value and consider that to be evidence. But like I said, using them as another tool, just like any of your other tools, your cameras and your recorders and all that. And if you can use them so they, point you to a particular spot in the room or a particular spot in the house, and help you, if you can come right up behind them and back that feeling up with documentable evidence, EMF readings and temperature fluctuations and things like that, then it's just another tool in your toolbox, basically.
Exactly, and that's pretty much the way I look at it. And I know some of them, they don't like to be referred to as a tool, but when you're investigating with them, that's what you kind of have to utilize them as, is, that's what you are. You're the EMF meter by my side. You're the one telling me where to point it and how. And then when I write up a report about the investigation, I'm gonna put just as much credibility into my EMF readings and my EVP recordings as I do my psychic and their impressions. They're gonna be a piece of evidence collected just as much as the piece of evidence collected through the other pieces of equipment.
Someone loved the ghost hunt here in the chat room just said that it's slowly becoming accepted and even the police are using them somewhat, which makes me think of something I discussed with a psychic a couple weeks ago, was putting together a website where law enforcement could anonymously ask for help, and then psychics could anonymously help them, and that way nobody would get ridiculed or anything, and the only person that would know what was going on is the middleman running the site, have maybe a 12 psychic something and say, okay, here's the case, give me whatever you get. And when you get a majority of psychics that agree on certain information, then pass that information back to law enforcement, who, anonymously, just, and let them take that information and run with it. And maybe that would be the way for law enforcement to gain more respect for using psychics, and for the psychics to gain more respect for their abilities as well, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and I agree. They are becoming a more psychic. You know, psychics are becoming more accepted than paranormal investigations and evidence we collect are. I mean, you can get a PhD in parapsychology. I mean, if there is a science to it, you can go to school. You know, there is no school, there's no college that's going to give you a degree in paranormal investigations, but you can go and you can get, you know, your degree in parapsychology, which includes psychokinetic, you know, energy and stuff like that. I mean, so it is more of a mainstream science than what we're doing as investigators. And, you know, you bring up law enforcement. I spent almost 10 years in law enforcement. And, you know, you're right. They do use psychics. I like to put it this way. You know, you really can't convict on it. It's the same process. You use the psychic to point you in the right direction as to where to look, but you still actually have to have the physical evidence. We can all say, look at that person, I know he's guilty. Well, what makes you know? I just know he is. I can't go up, you know, as a detective or as a law enforcement official and say, oh, he's guilty. Why, officer? Because I know he is. How do you know? My gut told me. That's not going to work. A judge and a jury is not going to say, oh, well, his gut told him, well, then he's guilty. You know, you still need the evidence. And that's how it kind of goes with psychics. You use them just like we would in a paranormal investigation. All right, I think you should look in that river. And then you're going to look in the river, maybe you'll find the gun that was thrown away, and you found it that way. But you can't just say, well, the psychic told me to look in the river, he's guilty because that's where it was, because the psychic. You know, it's the same concept, and you're right, they are getting more and more accepted.
Exactly, yeah. I'm just saying, when you've got these cold cases, you know, where the body's never been found, and the family can't rest, and things like that, you know, these 20, 30-year-old cases, I would think that's when you'd be open to using any tool available. And if a psychic can shed some light on which way to look, or, I mean, even if you never catch the killer, at least if you find a body so the family can at least bury it and put that part to rest, then I think it would be worthwhile. That's in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's true. And the same thing, in the same case when we're dealing with paranormal investigations, you know, we may be able to go in with a psychic, and the psychic can say, you know, there's nothing bad here. What you have is just a poor lost soul. And I know some psychics who will say they know how to, they'll communicate with the spirit, and they'll instruct the spirit to move on or tell them how to move on. And, you know, if in any case, you know, you made the homeowner feel better about themselves. And I think in the long run, as paranormal investigators, and we're dealing with clients in residential hauntings and having private people come to us about their house, that's our goal, is to make them be able to live in their own house and feel comfortable with themselves living there and not be in fear every night when they go to bed.
Ghost author here in the chat room said that they've always said, we need to start getting the attention of scientists. Well, I believe the scientific community is going to be about exactly the same as what I've learned in the music industry. In the music industry, once you've already made it and you've got your name out there and you're selling 30, 40,000 albums already, that's when a record company will step in and give you a record deal. When it's to the point where you're not sure you even need them anymore, that's when they'll come in. And I'm willing to say that's the same way it's going to be with this. Once we've already found that proof and we're already pretty much convinced that we know what's going on, that's when a whole bunch of scientists will come on and they'll spend $1 million on studying just to rehash what we've already figured out for them.
Right. And there are universities that are studying this. There are universities that are doing, you know, Penn State has a big paranormal program. You know, there are universities that are out there putting money into this. They're not widespread, but they are out there. It is becoming more accepted. And, you know, it does, like you said, it does take that one person. You know, for the longest time, we believed that the sun and everything revolved around the earth. And the people, you know, the people who said it didn't, they were heretics. They were hung. You know, they were ridiculed. You know, because they were going against, at that point in time, they were going against the church. Because the church said, no, the earth is the center of the universe and everything revolves around us. And, you know, you were put in prison for believing anything different. You know, it's not that serious now, but it's going to be the same concept, the same kind of thing, where eventually it's going to need to be accepted. When it is, the people who are doing the work are going to be the ones who are out there, you know, accepted, and, you know, will be there. It'll be a mainstream science. It takes time, just like everything else.
Yep, exactly. And the hard work's going to fall on the fruitcakes that are doing this now. The ones that don't care, they're getting ridiculed, and you know, you're going to be doing this late at night and not telling your friends what you're doing. Either that, or you won't have any friends anymore. But those are the people that are going to find the answers. I mean, they're the same. All the inventors down through history, you know, people thought they were nuts. And well, look at Da Vinci. Wasn't he drawing pictures of flying machines way back in what, the 1400s and stuff?
Oh yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, everything. You know, there was a point in time when we believed, you know, everything revolved around the earth. There was a point in time when we believed the earth was flat. You know, and the people who said it wasn't, then they were ridiculed and laughed at. You know, so much. You know, 60, 70 years ago, you told somebody your body is covered in small microorganisms, you're covered with other living creatures, you're going to get laughed at. A microscope was invented, and now we can see that it's there. What's going to be the next thing that right now we laugh at the people who believe in ghosts? We laugh at the people who say I'm haunted. Just like we laugh at the people who thought the earth was round. Eventually, everybody will probably catch on, and the science will be either proven, or who knows, it might be disproven that what we're finding is something other than spirits, but still something paranormal. Just when we say paranormal, we don't have to, you know, necessarily mean ghosts. It might be, you know, there might be weird energy balls floating around that's a natural occurring phenomenon we just don't know about that makes us hallucinate and think we're seeing ghosts. You know, who knows?
Yeah, it could be some, something in the atmosphere that creates a hallucinogenic effect, you know. It's like floating acid or something.
Maybe. And of course, then you have a bunch of hippies going out trying to walk in it.
All right, hold on a minute. Why don't you talk for a minute here? I got to screen a caller.
Okay, well, that was unexpected. Now I don't know where to go. But absolutely, I think definitely we, I'm just looking in at the chat room. I mean, I think everybody's really kind of agreeing with me on this subject that, you know, we are still the unproven science, but it's going to get there. And, you know, I think what's great right now about what's happening, and you got to kind of give credit to all these TV shows that are out there, they are bringing it forward. You know, they're making it a more well-known thing, creating a bigger interest in everything. So we're getting people,
all right,
more and more people.
Now.
Oh, you're back? We're just getting more and more people trying to do this. So
we got a caller on the line here if you want to introduce them.
Oh, we got Ron on the line? All right.
Yes, we do.
Ron Cole, he is the founder and director of New England Ghost Project out here in Massachusetts. I must say he was really the influential person, and their group was the influential group in getting my interest started in the paranormal and diving into this field headfirst. My first paranormal experiences occurred when I was on an investigation with Ron and his group, and ever since then I've been going at it headstrong. He is the host of Ghost Chronicles, Ghost Chronicles International, Ghost Village Radio, and has the most downloaded paranormal show on iTunes, which hopefully will give him a run for his money someday on that. You there, Ron?
I am. I'm still trying to figure out how to get into the chat room, so don't...
Yeah, that too busy walking around. I talk and walk, so I look at it briefly, but then I walk back by.
Yeah, you always were a nervous guy.
I am. I get nervous, and I walk around when I talk. Thank God for a hand shot on my cell phone. If I had a wire hooked up to the computer, I'd probably hang myself.
So anyway, let me tell you, it's a pleasure to be on the show. I have known you for quite a few years since our first investigation at the Houghton Mansion, and I've always enjoyed your company. I always like what you stand for. You're an independent thinker, and like I said, I'm glad to be here.
Oh, thank you, and I'm glad to have you here. I've been a guest on your show multiple times, and I'm kind of happy to have you here with us now. Today, we've kind of been talking about the different types of hauntings and different types of beliefs, the different ways religion kind of falls into ghost hunting and different forms, whether you're a scientific group or a purely psychic group or some sort of hybrid in between. How would you describe the way you investigate, your said hauntings are on?
How we investigate it or what type of group we are?
Kind of both. What type of group you would classify the New England Ghost Project, and how you go about your investigations.
Okay, basically, we just call ourselves a paranormal group. That's our paranormal investigators. We don't set our investigations to any particular creed. As you know, my partner is a transmedium, which is basically the character from Ghost, Whoopi Goldberg character, where the spirit goes right into her and talks through her. However, I have a degree in environmental science, and I'm very skeptical especially when I first started, and we use all the latest scientific equipment as well, so that's kind of what we do. And we'll go out there. The funny part about it is when I first started, I wanted to go out and prove to the world that ghosts exist. That's no longer my goal. There are so many people out there who just don't believe in ghosts, and even if a ghost came up to them and slapped them in the face, they would still deny it. So it's kind of what we try to do is basically share our experience with you, whoever's interested, and let them make up their own mind of what is real or what is their reality and what isn't.
Yeah, and I agree. I think if you were to take all your time in trying to devote it solely to proving to the people who don't believe in ghosts, I think you're going to run out of your breath. You run out of breath and run out of things to say long before you get half of them, if any of them, to actually believe what you've seen as a ghost.
Right, I really agree with that. Now, your partner, he is what, a non-believer, skeptic? I'm trying to figure out, but I'm not quite sure.
Al, describe himself to you.
I would say I'm a believer, but I've never been investigating or anything like that. It's in the back of my mind, lifelong interest in the paranormal, but for some reason in the last month or two, I just feel myself being called down this path to where I'm supposed to learn more. I come up with the idea of the show, and I went to Josh and I said, we got to do this, and I've been reading up and learning what I can, and getting contradictory things from what I read, so I've actually got more questions now than I had when I started. But I don't know if you want to, actually Gemini Rose said it was like divine inspiration. For some reason, I'm supposed to be learning this right now at this time, and I'm not sure why.
I kind of agree with you on that. I think that's what happened to a lot of people. I never in a million years would thought I'd be chasing ghosts, and yet that's what I'm doing. I mean, that's nothing I really cared about. I didn't grow up in a haunted house. I didn't have any paranormal experiences when I was young, but here I am.
Yeah, and I think I kind of have the same background. I didn't have that haunted house when I grew up to give me the questions. I didn't grow up in a family of psychics. And I think when you ask most people, that's what they'll say. I got into this because I grew up in a haunted house and I was looking for answers.
Damn, Josh, you got the Houghton Mansion.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up there. I mean, that's what got me interested, was eventually getting associated with a place that was haunted and had me, it created my questions. I think though.
But now you got to ask yourself. You got to ask yourself, why were you brought to that mansion at that particular time for a reason?
Because my dad was a member of the lodge, and he made me join.
Come on, you got a big picture here.
Oh, I know. I can. I'm all done painting pictures. No. Yeah, and I think. Yeah, I mean, everything draws us to that. And one thing you said that, you know, hit the nail on the head. Everybody thinks they're going to come in to get all the answers, and then once you're in, you end up with more questions than you had when you started. I still have tons of questions. There's still tons of things I want to learn, a lot more than I thought I was going to have, you know, 5-6 years ago when I started doing all this.
And I'm not into this to prove to anyone else that they exist. I'm into it more just to answer the question for myself. The older I get and the closer I get to being laid in that pine box or whatever, you know, the more burning the question is, what's going to happen? And I'd like to know ahead of time.
Right. I mean, you know, the other thing you guys talked about a little bit, too, is the right and wrong way of doing things. I mean, Josh mentioned, for instance, the Ghost Hunters, which is probably the most well-known ghost hunting group, and they go to debunk things. Is that the proper way of doing it? Not necessarily. That's what they do. So, I mean, you accept what they do, and the evidence they get is based on that.
Right.
For instance, though, however, just because you can reproduce something scientifically doesn't mean it wasn't paranormal at the time it happened.
All right. And I think we mentioned this last week when we were talking. Who can really say what the right way and wrong way is? Does anybody really know? I don't. I really hope nobody feels that way, because we don't. There is no way to really know what we're doing is the right way, and we won't until we're passed on.
Right. I mean, when I started, I was total skeptic. I didn't believe in psychics. I thought they were all charlatans, and of course, here I work with one. But the difference was, is just because I don't agree with a particular method or a thing, it's I don't close my eyes to it. I certainly want to investigate to see if there's any credence in it. That goes with dowsing or Reiki or any of that. I mean, that's kind of why I call myself New England's Van Helsing, because Van Helsing is a man of science, yet he was versed in the crafts and the arts. So that's kind of the way I think of myself, really.
Right, exactly. And I kind of, you said you, when you started out, you know, you were the skeptic, and you were the, I know, when you started investigating, you didn't work with Maureen, you didn't work with a psychic. What was it like when you kind of made that transition? Was it, you know, something that was difficult? I mean, did you have a hard time at one point saying, accepting in a different theory or different avenue into your investigations?
Well, it was really funny, because originally the first two people that I worked with, one of them thought of himself with mediumship or psychic ability, and, you know, I was like, poo-poo, whatever, you know. I really didn't give any credence. And then we were supposed to do this big investigation and go to this deserted island, be left off by boat overnight. And this woman applied for the job, and she was a psychic. And I sat and I thought about it. Well, just because I don't agree with what they do or believe in them, am I denying myself something? Am I denying evidence that could help me? Or, you know, how do I really know unless I work with it? And then as soon as I started working with her, I realized there was credence to what they do. Not all of them, by the way. Every psychic that comes to me really has, as far as I'm concerned, has to prove themselves. I really don't accept all psychics on their word value. If that's the case, you know, there's like 20 million of them out there.
Oh, exactly.
Well,
it's the same way.
It's like during an investigation, you might carry an EMF meter with you, but it won't always help you on every investigation.
Exactly.
But does that mean you're not going to bring a psychic with you just because it didn't work this time?
See, the amazing thing that really got me is that she would give me information that, number one, she wouldn't know, and number two, that I could actually go back and do the research or find out, you know, if there was any validity to it, and lo and behold, there was. I mean, anybody who listens to Ghost Chronicles know we fight like cats and dogs, but at least I'm willing to challenge her and listen to her at the same time.
Speaking of that, are you still having hot flashes?
Who told you that story?
I listened to your show. I listened to your show last week. In fact, it was the first one I'd listened to. So I got to ask you: do you and Richard go at each other like that all the time?
We do. We are. I speak my mind. Let's put it that way. And it's nothing personal. It's absolutely nothing personal. You know, I can call you a liar and be a friend to you next minute. But well, I wouldn't call you a liar, but I just may not agree with you. And but yeah, I don't hold grudges or whatever. It's just go on. I mean,
well, for the people in our chat room that don't know what we're talking about here, let me fill them in.
Yeah, but listen to this woman. What about the fact that if the psychic or medium, who let's face it, has probably more energy from within, actually sees the image and then has the ability to superimpose that image?
Oh, give me a break! Will you, Richard? Oh my God! You know what? You're starting to sound like Karen O'Keefe now. I hate to tell you that.
Well, that just tells you what kind of guy I am. So I hope I didn't offend you with that. But
no, not at all.
I found that hilarious. You guys are my kind of guys.
Well, yeah, it's so funny. I just say it like it is, basically, and what I believe in. I mean, I could be wrong, and you know, in 2 minutes you can prove it to me. But then again, I might be right, and you might be wrong. But, hey, we won't know unless we challenge each other.
That's right. And
what was funny is I see me and Josh in about a year acting the same way.
Maybe.
That would be interesting. But, you know, I have to tell you guys, I mean, I've been on the radio for, oh, God, like 6 or 7 years now, and I don't have any merchandise. You guys got merchandise already? I'm impressed. Haunted America t-shirts?
I don't even know if Josh knows about them.
I did see that. I might have, once I actually maybe get a job and some money, I'm probably going to have to order one and walk around.
I think it's a great idea.
That was, that was something
credit.
I dreamed up last week.
I have a request, let me tell you.
There's coffee mugs, too.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've had those.
I still have my New England Ghost Project coffee mug and use it as often as possible.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you know what the funny part about those is? We gave those out like in events and stuff. Or if we had people on, they were on one side in the front of it said, "I survived the night with the New England Ghost Project," and then on each side it was like 3 advertising spots. So there was like 6 advertising spots on the mug. So they actually paid for the mugs. So that actually worked.
That's right. Well. Yeah, that works. That works.
Of course, I caught a lot of flack for that too. But whatever.
So you're like the Gene Simmons of ghost hunting, then, right?
No. He's
if you've ever watched his show on TV, I mean, it's all about figuring out how to make money.
Yeah. If only we could make it more.
As Josh knows, unfortunately, whatever you do in life is money driven. It's not like you're going to get rich doing this at all. In fact, there are a lot of people out there who go into it for the wrong reasons. It's not a money-making venture for the most part. If you break even or you make a couple bucks, it's fine.
Yeah, and you're right.
Exactly.
I have met those people who jump into this thinking, well, I'm going to be the next person to have a TV show. And I know people who have been doing this a lot longer than me and, you know, who try to get their own TV shows and they get knocked down every time. It, you know, and you got to think about it. Everybody already has that TV show. There's not room for too many more. If you're getting in this to be a famous ghost hunter or to get your own TV show or to get on TV, well, you're doing it for the wrong reason and you might as well stop now because 90% chance of it is it's not going to happen.
And how long do they last? I mean, you look at Chris Fleming and look at what's Patrick Burns and Jane Doherty. I mean, they all had their shows, and they've gone by the boards. It's your 15 minutes of fame. It's how long you last after it really matters. Now, I'm not saying any of these these guys that I mentioned aren't good guys or anything, but I'm just saying that...
it's a saturated market.
It's all about the breaks, too, you know? But that's another side. We're really here to talk about ghosts, not about...
Yeah, that's true. We're getting off subject. another thing I kind of want to ask you, Ron, is I know you have something coming out towards the end of the year. You got your book coming out.
Absolutely.
Pretty excited about that.
We are, too. I mean, I read it now. We actually got the advanced copies of it, and I look at it, and I say, holy crap, I did that shit. Oh, can I say that? No, I can't. Oops.
I don't know. It's the internet.
Sure you can.
Beep. You know what's funny? This is Blog Talk. Blog Talk, we have a good friend who's Christian Day, who has a radio show. He was looking to do one, and he ended up on Blog Talk so he could say whatever he wanted to say. I thought that was neat. But we were talking about the book, and, yeah, it's coming out. 17 of our cases, including the first adventure to the Houghton Mansion. There's also one of the exorcisms that I accompanied a Franciscan monk with for the Catholic Church, which was interesting, too. There's the Lizzie Borden house. There's quite a few. The 17 of the earlier episodes, I guess you would say, of the Ghost Project.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any of those, you know, I say out of all of them, you know, all your hauntings, you don't have to say the Houghton Mansion just because I'm here. No, that was probably your favorite one to go back to, or your most compelling that... No, you just want to keep going back there because every time you go, you get the best evidence and the best experiences.
Well, let me tell you, as far as Maureen's concerned, she hates going to the Houghton Mansion. and you know, I think, the reason why for that, Josh.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel bad for her sometimes when she sometimes, not all the time. Sometimes when she walks in, because it seems like, you know, Mr. Houghton himself, and I've described him, and anybody else who's probably been in there and had the luxury of meeting him, as just a cranky old man ghost. And for whatever reason, she walks in there, and it's just an onslaught for the rest of the night.
Yeah, he really considers us meddlers there, so as you know all about the thing with Witter and Mary. Now, none of that can be proven, you know, that.
Right.
You know that.
Yeah, but you never know. It does make a compelling story to it, and, you know, it could make sense at the same time. So you never know. I think one thing, too,
I've always wondered why there's never any reports of haunted the scene of the accident.
Well, I think because it's still a rural road. Nobody's really there to find out. Maybe there is. But it's still just kind of a...
Sorry, I got cut off. What are we talking about, guys?
Pat was just asking, you know, why there's never been any reports of a haunting at the site of the accident where, you know, Mary and Sybil Houghton was actually killed.
Right. Well, who says that ghost spirits are going to hang out there anyways? I mean, what the hell would you be doing there? Wouldn't that be kind of boring, watching the cars go by?
Right, and I think, you know, maybe there is.
Would you be more comfortable in your own house?
Right. I would feel that way. You're going to go, if you're attached to the earth and you can't move on, or you don't know you've passed, you're going to go home.
Maybe,
you're not going to hang out on the roadside.
Yeah, or maybe you don't want to go.
There's something here you feel you need to protect or carry on. You know, you never know.
Has anyone ever tried introducing Mr. Houghton's ghost to Mary's ghost and hook them up so they can both move on together?
Oh, my God. You don't even want to go there, Alan.
Oh, we've had a few experiences.
this is just what's popping into my head, listening, you know, what I know of the story, that's all.
Yeah, there's a few different times. I know during Contact, we used, I know Maureen and, I think it might have been Christian, actually, who you just mentioned. We're trying to communicate, and I think they were bringing John Witters and Mary together, is what the belief was at that night.
Right. That's the deal on that one. Mary John Witters had a thing going on, and there's even more about it. I mean, it's like I said, it's all conjecture, but it's almost like I always consider it a paranormal soap opera over there at the Houghton Mansion.
That's true. We could definitely write a soap opera script on it if we really wanted to.
I remember the last contact we did, and we had Jane Daugherty, and she did a seance with the Crystal Skulls, and Maureen actually got thrown across the room, knocked out of right over the chair.
I know. Another thing, and I was going to bring it up at that last contact, and we were kind of doing the midnight communication, and we were using, I think it was a Spiritcom device, some sort of like Spiritcom with like live EVP with Mike.
Right. Right.
And Jane and Maureen were doing an automatic writing, and I was actually had a K2 meter going and getting some answers, so we were kind of like covering all the bases with communications. And I remember at one point you asked, you know, Mr. Houghton or something along those lines, what is your, how do you feel about women? And it came right over that Spiritcom with they have their place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was real clear, and, you know, kind of might give you another insight as to why, you know, he is the way he is when, you know, you may have a female psychic, you know, going into the building.
You know what's interesting, too, is that you have so many reactions from spirits where there's this conflict in the afterlife between them, almost like some places are haunted like more than one spirit. There might be three spirits, but there's a dominant one. There may be spirits that want to go, but this dominant one doesn't allow them to leave. Might not even be from the same time period, yet there's this relationship going on. I remember at the we did an investigation at the Inn on Washington Square in Salem, Massachusetts, and there was an undertaker who was one of the spirits there. This is once again just through psychic thing and yada yada. But anyways, we did this glass whirling thing, and we had made contact with a woman in this house who was actually afraid of this other spirit. And then we went through all the questions and everything else, and finally, you know, you run out of questions sometimes. It sounds funny, but you do. So we asked the spirit, do you have a question for us? And it said, yes. And then we said, for who? And then we started going through this was a ghost hunt seminar, so there was like 12 people in the room, so we kept going through all the people in the room, and she kept saying no, 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 and then eventually we said, well, we don't have anybody left, who do you want a message for? And somebody from the room said, do you have a message for Ron? And it did answer yes. And then basically through this thing, the spirit asked for our help to get rid of this other spirit that was in the house. And then as this was going on, there was a change in the presence of the room, and it seemed that this other spirit came in, and the other spirit, now I can't tell if it just wanted to go into me or through me or whatever it was, but it hit me like a cannonball. The next day I actually had a bruise in my chest where the spirit had hit me, and actually with so much force. I had never felt anything like that in my life before. So, I mean,
wow.
We really don't know. It's weird stuff. The more you do it, the weirder it gets.
It's true, and you just go back to what we said a half hour ago. You think you're going to get all the answers, and you just end up with more questions. I know, and let's see what your opinion is on this. This is something that, you know, we were talking about with the different styles, and when you do work with a psychic, I've always kind of under the impression sometimes, too, that you might almost get like a false positive working with a psychic, because I know some psychics kind of have the feeling that, you know, and that spirit is attracted to them. You know, they see a psychic as a lighthouse or a beacon. You know, oh my God, this is somebody I can talk to and communicate with. So maybe you're investigating a house and some stray spirits walk up the sidewalk and they say, oh, there's somebody I can communicate with in there.
Yeah, street ghosts. Exactly, street ghosts.
You know, they're going to come in and, you know, they might put their impression into the psychic and it might, you know, falsely be associated with that house. I mean, do you think you ever run into that problem?
I can actually tell you an interesting case we did just yesterday. There's a place called Dudley Road in Berwicker, and it has all kinds of stories with it and everything else. You know, nuns being murdered because they were pregnant by a priest who hung themselves, insane asylum escapee went in and killed the nuns, blah, 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 blah. All this stuff anyway. So Maureen knew nothing about the road, and she didn't even know where we were going. So we went in, and she started coming up with all this stuff. And basically, what she was coming up with was all these legends. Now, I know that all these legends are false because of research that I have done and Chris Bolzano has done. And it was really funny because now I'm getting the feel that, okay, I know this stuff isn't real, but she's coming up with it, and yet she doesn't know about them. So where is she getting it from? So it's either three things. Number one, they really did happen, even though there's no proof of it. Two, she's actually reading my thoughts, which is very possible. Okay.
Yeah.
Number three, the spirits are fooling around with us. And,
yeah.
So basically, I went on the third one, the third route, and we began challenging the spirits who was talking. And, you know, we pretty much got the thought that, yeah, this is what they were doing. They do this to everyone up there. They're actually using their own energy to make this a reality, even though it really isn't, because that's what people are going there to see and find. So
right.
they're kind of like messing with you, basically. And the other thing is we were able to get a glimpse of kind of what they were, and they were more of an older spirit, like a druid or possibly someone into witchcraft. And this is the underlying thing that we kind of got from it. Now, do we have any proof for this? Of course not. This is all just feelings that we picked up. But once again, we didn't accept the feeling that, okay, yeah, this is stuff. Because I was, like, shocked, because everything she told me was like, this was all the bullshit that, you know, that was supposed to be up there. And, like I said, we did the research. It's really not based on anything. So, interesting possibility, though, you know. Yeah,
you're right. And
yeah.
If they're older spirits, you say druids or something, you know, pre-colonial, you know, the spirits from that were, you know, here in North America prior to colonization, you know,
yeah.
it might be their way of trying to connect with the modern people that are there. They've learned these stories, they've heard them, and now they're, you know, it might be their way to try and become accepted and be with the more modern times that are around them that they may not understand.
That's the key word, what you said, be accepted. Because most spirits that are in a house, I really don't believe it can exist there without the acceptance of the owner, one way or another, either through fear or through invitation. You can invite a spirit subconsciously and consciously.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
So they're giving you what you want, basically.
I've always kind of fell to the belief that, you know, you got to think, you know, that they say, you know, spirit needs to gather energy to make itself known and to manifest. Now, I would imagine as a spirit, that takes some work. You know, it takes, you know, some sort of effort on its behalf to gather that energy to make itself known. Why would you bother wasting your time gathering the energy and making yourself known for someone who's just going to poo-poo you away and not believe you? I think you're only somebody who's going to accept the fact that there is something there, are they going to waste their time gathering the energy to make themselves known for somebody who's going to actually believe them, opposed to somebody who's going to say, that was nothing. They're not going to keep
right.
doing it.
Right. So, Alan, what are you taking on all this?
I'm learning some good stuff, actually.
I thought you fell asleep on us there. I don't know.
Nope, not at all. my thought... as far as intelligent hauntings, I mean, I know residual hauntings would be part of probably connected to a house or a place. Intelligent hauntings, do you find them to be more connected to a person or a place?
I would say both. I mean, that's
okay.
A cop-out, but that's what it is, basically. You can find spirits that are, for instance... if somebody loved their house so much and put a lot of time and everything in it, and you know that's, you know, they just don't want to leave. You know, that's their house, and that's why a lot of times when you have renovations in a house, you have haunting where you never had a haunting before. The spirit might not like what's going on, or, you know, because that was their house, and they still think it's their house. They still see it as their house.
Right. I think
so. Another thought comes into my mind as we learn more about this and what it is on the other side. I know, I don't know if you've read Voices of Eternity by Sarah Estep. I just finished reading it where she was doing EVPs with people. When she was doing EVPs with people that have already crossed over and were supposedly talking to her back from heaven or whatever you want to call it, describing to her what it looks like over there. So as we do more investigating and the years go on and people begin to learn more about what's on the other side, would you think that more ghosts would be more apt to cross over, knowing how great it is over there, and less of them sticking around here than happens now?
Interesting.
That's a good thought. That's a mind-boggler.
Yeah. The interesting thing about spirits coming back, for instance, is, yeah, I believe in that. I believe that, there are guardian angels, whatever you want to call them, guides or whatever, but they come back to help you for a particular reason. Maybe it's to earn points. I don't know. So you move up a level or whatever. Like I said, I really don't know until you go over there. But I do believe that there are spirits that come back for particular reasons, for temporary. And yet there are spirits that have never left as well. Is it just because they can't see the light? That bugs the hell out of me. I don't believe it. I remember one investigation I did, and we got a bunch of readings, but, just normal stuff. It was, you could tell there was a little bit of stuff going on, but some other people from they came in and they said, well, you got 400 pre-revolutionary soldiers there, and there's this there and that there, and there's a portal and everything else, and I showed them the light and they all left. Like, there was 400 soldiers from the Revolutionary War, and it took them, how many hundreds of years to say, oh, geez, I never saw that light before.
Well, that's because they didn't pay the fee.
Evidently, my God, it's like, so that is difficult for me to believe. I can't believe that you just go over there and show a spirit the light and it just like passes on. I think there are particular reasons why you're here.
Nobody paid the ghost hunters their fee to make them go away. That's all.
But you know what's funny, Alan? You're gonna love this. Is when we went in there, we did pick up one EVP, and it said it's the Ghostbusters when we came in.
Yeah, I see. I'm just looking in the chat room there. Ghost author, he pretty much summed up what we were talking about earlier. A quick, easy definition for those of you who are in there of what a intelligent haunt is. He hit it right on the head for those who are looking. That's the quick, easy definition. Two things have really come up in this conversation you guys just had. Al, you mentioned, are they attached to one place, to the place, or to a person? It depends on the haunting. The best way to say maybe attached to a place is probably one of the world's most haunted places is Gettysburg. People see all these ghost soldiers walking around. Chances are there's not a person there they're attached to, but yet the place, due to whatever tragedy happened to them, they can't move on or want to move on. Where I think
my thought was that most of them would be residual, though.
Could be.
It could be. I think that place is so active, you probably got a little bit of everything hanging around out there.
I think you'd have to do it on a case-by-case example there.
And then secondly, I think, and Ron can kind of attest to this, with the Houghton Mansion. Now, Witters, we have three... for those who are familiar with it, I really don't want to get into the whole history of the building and the haunting. Well, we have, our three spirits, one being Mr. Holt and one being his daughter. If his daughter's not moving on, maybe he's staying there because she's still there and doesn't want to leave her behind, or vice versa.
Now, what about the other girl?
The other girl, we haven't even made up our mind on her yet. We don't know where that little girl came from.
Oh, the young girl in the basement?
Well,
that one.
Because there was two... There was two girls that got killed, right?
There were, but only one of them was a resident or an actual Houghton.
Right. Well, what I'm thinking is if the other one isn't hanging around, then it seems to be just a major three, and maybe Mr. Houghton's got, putting his foot down. You're my daughter, you're my employee, you're going to stay here with me. So until he decides to move on, nobody else is going either.
I know that when we first came up there, we had made contact with a young girl in the basement, I believe.
Right, and she's still there. I've seen her with my own two eyes. She appears as a shadow quite often to a lot of people.
We don't know her connection to the mansion at all.
Mr. Houghton had a young daughter that died at a very young age. I want to say 6 or 7, but she didn't live in that building, but maybe she's attached to her father and it's her. Or it could be something else. We really don't know, and we haven't really, I guess, opened up a dialogue with her to find out. I know, to kind of go back to what we were talking about, being attached to a person. You know, when you read the old newspaper articles and you really get into their history, Mary Houghton was devoted to taking care of her father. So now if he's not moving on, maybe where he may be, you're just that he might be keeping her there. If he's not moving on and she devoted her life to watching over him, maybe she's still there to watch over him. Or if we adopt the theory that some people believe her and Mr. Witters had a thing together, then they're staying together to be together, and Miss and Houghton's staying there to watch over them to make sure nothing happens. You could tie it a million different ways.
Right, exactly. The interesting thing, too, you mentioned is ghosts can be ground to a specific place, even if it's an intelligent haunting. For instance, Tortilla Flats is a restaurant up in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and it's comprised of two houses that are put together, yet the ghosts seem to be only able to haunt one of the houses and not been able to move in the other side of the restaurant, which is kind of interesting in itself.
Yeah, exactly. I lost my train of thought. I had something I wanted to say, and it completely went by me.
Train left the station.
Mine's a terrible thing to waste. You know that,
John. I know. We mentioned earlier, Ron, we were talking about it, and I know you have your own beliefs into it. You know, how religion kind of plays into paranormal investigations, because I know there are some groups that really study Wiccan, and they have a Wiccan practice, and they use that to influence the way they investigate. And, you know, certain religions have no belief in the afterlife as far as ghosts go, and some believe that there's a purgatory, or, like you were mentioning, you know, there are certain religions that believe in the seven layers of heaven, that you have to perform certain tasks to move on. Is there a certain way you feel that religion has fallen into your different investigations?
Well, as most people know me, know that I'm a devout Catholic. I mean, I'm active in the church and so forth and everything else. So I'm not afraid of my Catholic religion. I find it comforting, and I also find it very protective in my ghost hunting. Working with Maureen is not a treat at times. When she's trans-channeling, a spirit is in here, or there are some spirits out there that actually don't like me, and we've had altercations before, physical altercations. I mean, she's dislocated my fingers before, tossed me across the room, and things like that. So I find my religion very comfortable in ghost hunting. And the other thing is, I get a kick out of it because, Wiccan was not an accepted religion at one time, was looked down upon. And so a lot of times I do ghost seminars and everything. I have people who are Wiccan and everything. And now, because I'm Catholic, I'm the one that's looked down upon. So I think that's kind of funny. You know, they want to be accepted, yet they're not willing to accept another religion. So
that's true. And I think, I know a lot of times when I go to a investigation and we get called to a private residence, one of my first questions I always ask is, what is your religious belief? Because a lot of times the way you're going to make them feel more comfortable, or the effort you may take to try and to rid the house of said spirit will be based on that. You're not going to obviously use a Wiccan or pagan practice of spirit removal in a house of a devout Catholic. You might ask them to call a clergy, or their priest to come in and bless the house, opposed to having someone come in with a smudge stick and do that for a cleansing. So, somebody in the chat room said, paranormal and religion is a touchy subject, and it is. Because some religions really look down upon the whole, afterlife and ghost thing.
As you know, I don't back down from any of that, and I'm proud of my religion, and to me it's important, and I say that. As you know, I carry my big ass cross, so that's
oh, absolutely.
Helped me
this time. One thing you taught us when we first started is, when we first met your group, and to go back to around to the New England Ghost Project, and you used holy water.
Right.
Blessed your equipment with holy water. And I know I try to, on most investigations, I forget sometimes, but most of the group, they will always take, a little dash of holy water that we keep in our gear bags and put it on their batteries. And some people say, if anything, the theory about their ghosts drain batteries, that they don't drain as quick when you put a little bit of holy water onto that piece of equipment.
Even if you don't believe in it, what harm can it do you?
Exactly. It takes 5 seconds of your time.
We do the St. Michael's Prayer, which is, you know, is used in Wiccan as well. St. Michael is the archangel. He's the patron saint of soldiers and policemen, and you know, it's a good protection. And once again, no harm. You know, just because you say the prayer, you're not going to, you know, harm yourself in any way. It can only help you. So,
absolutely.
The water doesn't short the batteries out.
Well, you always kind of, it's just you dab a little bit on your finger, and you'll usually make a sign of a cross over the casing. You're not really dipping it into, you're not giving it a baptismal.
Right. The first time I did that is when I first started my paranormal group, we actually had a TV show. It was on WNDS TV in Barrie, New Hampshire. And we used to go out and do shooting in different haunted places, of course. But the first time we ever went out was to a cemetery to shoot some bee footage. And we had 7 batteries. I think we were like 3 hours apiece, and we got like 45 minutes out of the whole pile of them. And then the next time we went out, we blessed them with holy water, and we had no problems whatsoever. And we've used this many a times and had quite, you know, good success with it. So if it works, why not? That's the way I look at it.
It doesn't hurt to try. It never hurts to try.
Yeah, and in fact, if you do get a chance to read our book, there's one chapter in there called The Spectral Hitchhiker, where a spirit actually follows us home and tries to trans-channel through Maureen while we're driving, while she's driving. So that was interesting. We did end up using some holy water, or as I like to call my special blend, to send it packing.
Exactly. We're getting close.
Alan must be all like mesmerized by all this because he's so quiet.
I'm alert. Exactly. I want to learn from the best. So I'm want to take it all in here. The thing that popped into my mind was I was talking to Josh earlier about some shows I've seen where they've said that there is no hell. That was only made up by the church just to scare people into following church doctrine. So that there's really no demons, they're just real negative human entities, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, Richard Felix, for most haunted, believes that. He believes there are no demons whatsoever. He believes, for the reasons you believe, he believes it's because of,
right,
of the church. But, you know, that's their beliefs, and if it works for them, fine. But I'm certainly know that I run into what I believe are demons, which are spirits that never had bodies, non-corporeal entities. And, you know, so as far as my experiences are, they exist. Yes, I've met some nasty ghosts, too. But
I can imagine what you told Richard.
Yeah, you won't go there.
In fact, probably sounded like this.
Now, wait a minute. You're saying that a camera's going to perceive a ghost one time and another time it won't. Oh, give me a break, Richard. Yes. Are you serious? Okay. This is kind of embarrassing, you know that? I don't like to listen to my shows.
Well, I gotta tell everyone to listen to both Ghost Chronicles and Ghost Chronicles International, because I had more fun listening to them two shows this week. I gotta go back and listen to all the old ones now.
Oh my god!
Yeah, like I said, we were getting close to the top of the hour and the end of the show here, and I wanted to give that moment for Ron too. There, you know, to plug his shows and if anything you have coming up. I know you do a lot of different events and different public events, centered around ghosts.
We've got a pretty big schedule actually coming up. First of all, Richard Felix from Most Haunted is coming over here in August, so we have a bunch of events planned with him. We have some dinners, Dining with the Dead. We run a Dining with the Dead series, which is a dinner and a paranormal speaker or event. And then we have some tours of ghost investigations at lighthouses.
Gettysburg.
Oh, Gettysburg is big because we'll also be there with Mark Nesmith, who is Mr. Gettysburg. He He runs, he's wrote the book, The Ghost of Gettysburg, and he also has Ghost of Gettysburg tours. I mean, he's been on a Travel Channel and History Channel, and anytime you want to know anything about Gettysburg, they usually give Mark a call. And
well, being a Civil War reenactor, we got to get him on this show.
Oh, are you really?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I'm in the 2nd Battery Vermont Light Artillery.
Excellent. Yes, yes. You know, I'm a Southern sympathizer, by the way, my friend.
Well, actually, I see both sides of it. I see the Confederates as being the very first to fight for states' rights. So I can sympathize with them just as well.
But anyways, our website is anyghostproject.com. That's anyghostproject.com. You can find a lot of information about our radio shows and events and so forth going
yeah,
on.
So you have a whole list of all your events listed right there and all that?
Yeah, and we also are running some tours for the Portsmouth Friends of Portsmouth Lighthouse. We're trying to raise some money for them. We get involved in different projects that raise money for different nonprofit organizations. And this is one of them. I'm going to be doing 3 ghost tours each month, June, July, and August, at the Portsmouth Lighthouse. And it's like a $2 donation, so, I mean, it's really a good deal. And then in September, we'll be doing a ghost hunt there where you can actually go in and go ghost hunting with the New England Ghost Project and Jeremy Dietrichmann, who is a member of the Friends of Portsmouth Lighthouse. And a good portion of the proceeds will go to the Friends of Portsmouth Lighthouse, who just got Whaleback Lighthouse as well to take care of, so it's all for a good cause.
All right, and what's the name of your book again that you got coming out, and when can we be looking forward to seeing that?
Ghost Chronicles is the name of the book. Surprise, surprise. and it is it's actually on pre-sale on Amazon, but I'd wait. I'd hate to buy something myself and have to wait for it. So it comes out in September.
Good. I know I'm looking forward to get my hands on a copy, so
yeah, you're
definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, the Houghton Mansion is in there, as I mentioned. Wood Island Lighthouse is in there. Lizzie Borden House. There's a case where it's really interesting. Dangerous Pursuits, which sometimes the living are more dangerous than the dead, and that's in there too. So it's interesting. But that's for how I first met Maureen and so forth.
Oh, good.
Before I get that, the coolest thing about it, it's written both our voices, Maureen and myself. So you actually are there when we do an investigation. You feel what she's feeling and think what she's thinking, and the same with me. So it's kind of different than the other ghost book that's around.
Yeah, that's a really nice approach. You know, to kind of get two sides of it all at once.
Yeah, I can just see the part where, oh my God, she's having another hot flash.
Oh, geez. For those who don't know what Alan's talking about, is that Maureen and I, because we work so well together, I think that almost like our vibrations are running at the same level, because we're very attuned to each other. I play hockey, and I remember one time I took a nasty spill, got hit into the boards, and she didn't know anything about this, and I talked to her at the end of the week, but she ended up with nasty headaches, and she went and got an MRI and everything else, and she told me, she says, when I told her what happened, she said, go to the hospital, you have a concussion, and sure enough, I did, so cost her for an MRI because of my concussion. So,
right.
However, payback, it seems like that she's going through these hot flashes thing, and it seems like I'm getting them, because even my wife's saying, I can't wait until Maureen gets sober with these. So that's what that's all about, and I hope we never hear about that again.
All right. Well, we're just about time to wrap up here, Ron. I'd like to thank you for coming on. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and we made it through a whole hour. I had no doubt that we could go on for another half hour here, but time is up.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for those little clips. I really appreciate that, by the way.
It was a pleasure meeting you. I hope I get to meet you in person, and then you can slap me or whatever you want to do.
There you go. I'll send Maureen after you.
All right, and one more time, his website. All information about the New England Ghost Project, all their events they do, and their upcoming book, Ghost Chronicles, can be found at www.neghostproject.com. And thank you very much, Ron.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Where can we find their radio shows?
Oh, radio.
It's on www.togi.net.com. You go to the website; they're all linked from there. It's easier.
Okay.
There's like three or four of them, so that's the best way to do it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Well, we got about 5 minutes left here to wrap up. There's a few things I kind of wanted to bring up. I thank you, everybody, for listening. I can see our chat room audience has almost quadrupled from last week, and I'm glad we made it through without any technical difficulties and very minimal amount of dead air.
As you can see, I didn't copy his website address very well. I appreciate you straightening me out on that. I could have sworn he said Indy, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's just kind of the way you pronounce it, N-E and N-E Ghost Project and Indy. It kind of sound alike, I guess. I've just been going to his website so many times that, you know, I know it off the top of my head. I know one thing I kind of wanted to bring up here, kind of my own promotion. For anybody who's interested, I'm going to be keep watching BerkshireParanormal.com over the next couple weeks, over the next month. We're going to be announcing an event coming up in Vermont at one of the most haunted inns, probably in the Northeast, especially in Vermont. We're going to have a chance for you to be able to get a room in this inn that's haunted and for two nights. And over the three-day period, you're going to get lectures, be taught how to hunt ghosts, a history of the building, probably pull on a couple other lecturers. I don't want to really release any names quite yet. Ron might be one of them. We don't know. And it's going to be a chance for you to go out into an actual haunted place and get to learn how to hunt ghosts and also, you know, spend the night in a haunted inn. Definitely stay tuned over the course of the next month here. Keep watching my webpage, BerkshireParanormal.com, for a chance to get to that event and definitely get your tickets. It's going to be an awesome weekend.
Sounds good. I can't wait because that's not too far away from me. I'm going to have to get in on that.
I don't want to release any names or any locations. It's kind of easy to figure out if I say Haunted Inn in Manchester and that one of the ghosts might be Mary Todd Lincoln and Abe Lincoln himself. So if you can plug in the rest in between, then you'll maybe be able to figure it out. But I don't. It's not official yet. It's still in the workings. But it's most likely going to happen. It'll be in August. So keep your ears tuned to it. It's definitely going to be something worthwhile and a lot of fun.
All right, we got about a minute left before we have to get out of here. Any idea what we're going to discuss next week? Or?
Well, I think next week. Boy, I don't know. Do you have any ideas? I'm kind of thinking more. We really went into kind of, you know, the religious thing and the whole, you know, the basics of what ghosts are and all that. I think we'll definitely get a ghost. It'd be really cool if we get a ghost guest in the second half. So we'll have a guest probably in the second half again. We'll announce him or her over the next 2 days. I have a couple people in mind. I just got to get it confirmed. And I think maybe, you know, we did the EVP thing. We've done the basics thing. I think maybe a little bit more of just the flat out science of all this and what we're talking about when we say milligauss and EVP and white noise and static electricity and, you know, thermal imaging and what all that means and how it really plays into what we're doing.
All right, sounds good. I look forward to that. And you still got to shoot me over some audio and pictures from what you were talking about last week.
Oh, so, I know. This,
I guess this is, we got about 15 seconds here if you want to wrap it up.
All right, well, thank you everybody so much for tuning in. Those are here, and those of you a podcast, I appreciate it so much. Look forward to next week's show, Sunday night at 5 o'clock, right here at Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Appreciate everyone for hanging in there. Please tell all your friends. We'd like to build up our audience here. So we'll catch everyone next week right back here, 5 p.m.